Welcome to a Fear the Boot bonus episode.
Holy cow, that just really weirded me out.
No, nothing should weird you out around here.
This is our take two of a bonus episode?
Yeah, because you see, people say they just like to hear us blah, blah, blah about nothing in particular, but they lie, because as soon as we release that, they're like, that was pointless. That was a waste of time. Why'd you
That
release?
Was the point! It's a bonus episode!
No!
The entire point of a bonus episode is that
Chad,
it's pointless.
Not your rant.
Meandering.
Not your rant.
No. You're angry. This is already a better episode.
Time for Chris's
now,
rant.
If this is your first time, focus your chi. If this
Breathe,
is the first
Chad.
Time tuning into Fear the Boot, then we recommend going and checking out a regular episode first, because these bonus episodes are not edited and they are on a completely different subject set than our normal shows. So go check out a regular episode first. Now, with us on the mics, we have an unusual setup. Chad and Adam, as
this
you...
is take two of a bonus episode.
Oh, wow. Boo-hoo. Chad and Adam are here. Chad's bitching and whining as usual.
I'm about to break a chair over somewhere.
Adam apparently just threw up because he can't handle Mexican food.
Well,
he didn't eat any Mexican food.
You know what? I am completely sober now. I feel great.
All right. But then also with us on the mics, we have two first-time guests. One is Scott, who is Renaissance Wolf on the forums, who actually is a local here that's hanging out with us tonight.
I thought you were about to say local hero. I'm like, what so don't I, like,
oh,
I know?
Oh my God.
No.
I would
no.
actually, I would, if I would
Look
call,
at that beard!
I would call him a forum hero, if I would call him any kind of hero.
I think
everybody
he's definitely
gets a hero on the forum.
Beards do make people heroes. And then not bearded, and therefore not a hero at all.
I'm a hero to pasty white men everywhere.
And see, we got me out of the way first, because my resume is nothing compared to the next man.
Next on the mic is Chris Hussey, who used to work as a writer for FASA.
Porn.
We'll get to that.
No,
and used to work as a writer for FASA, doing Battletech books, did Hotspots, Periphery Source Book. Contributed Chaos March, Explorer
some Shadowrun crap,
MechWarrior. I think I was in the MechWarrior Companion, MechWarrior 3rd Edition.
Oh man,
I did some Shadowrun stuff.
On the mics. Yeah, don't
it's not that bad.
Don't admit that MechWarrior Companion on the mics. Now,
MechForce North America, much like yourself.
Yeah, I wrote for I did indeed write for MechForce North America. Now,
MechForce North.
Chris, you said you had a rant.
I had a
Fear the Boot is all about.
Rant.
Pointless
rants?
Yes.
You know, and this rant is not clearly well thought out, but I'll try and couch it in some perspective.
That's the best kind.
To, being in my mid to late 30s, you know, I don't necessarily have a whole lot of time to play computer games. I love and enjoy computer games. However, because I grew up in the Atari 2600 generation, all right, and so I'm just a caveman. Your Xbox 360s and your PlayStation 3s and Nintendo Wii's frighten and confuse me.
You know, just a note on efficiency, you could have summed this up as I'm old, busy, and like combat.
But okay. I'm old, busy, and I like combat.
Okay,
but
continue.
Why aren't there more turn-based strategy games? I'm so tired of the real-time strategy games. I am not fast enough for real-time strategy. I tried the original Warcraft when it came out, hated it.
All I do on
the interface
weekends
was so clunky.
Work.
That game was almost a
you know what?
Strategy.
But the interface didn't even bother me. It's like I was doing it, and while I was over here trying to accomplish something, I come back and everything I had previously accomplished is gone. But I didn't even have the chance to even know about it. And then Mech Commander was another one. I tried that game, and I just couldn't do it because there's too much going on, and I'm too used to turn-based games, whether they're tabletop or whether they're computer games.
I don't think this is an age thing, because my dad plays Warcraft, too.
I think it's a personality thing, because I am very anal, and I like to think about my moves. I don't like having to move my armies at once while I'm building new armies and have to concentrate.
Especially when the computer can move every single 1,000-unit army they have at the same moment.
You know, see, and that's all the computer has to do. That's all the computer has to worry about. What time is it?
I got
to get up for work tomorrow.
Theoretically speaking,
conquer this nation if I know I got to go to bed now.
Also, theoretically speaking, the computer has an infinite number of hands and an infinite number of mice to work with. I remember playing Warcraft 2, playing on the side of the humans that, you know, you have, let's say, for example, you have a bunch of paladins and you want them all to heal each other. You find one, click it, hit heal, hit another guy. Oh, wait, he moved. There we go. He's out of mana. Okay, I want this one. Okay, click heal. All right, now you heal this guy. As opposed to the computer where you just see this wall of horses that heal each other as fast as you can possibly hurt them until they're out of mana and then they might die. great. It's real time.
I didn't have these problems.
No, I was
you
able
probably
to.
Probably had a crappy computer then.
Yeah. You're
no, I had no, the winning. Cause... The skill, I'm sorry.
No, I did I say I lost? No, I just said the computer can click faster than I can.
I just thought you had
ADD. Right. So, I do like real-time strategy games. Age of Wonders was great.
That's all I do at work on the weekends. I work in a data center completely unsupervised with nothing to do. All I do is play Age of Wonders 1 and 2.
Lords of Magic was awesome, except they...
Multiplayer didn't work.
Multiplayer didn't work, and they never patched it. We kept going back to the Sierra site, writing them emails, pleading with them to patch the game, and all we ever got was about every week they'd release some new review, say, read this review, see how great this game is.
I don't want to talk about the aborted child that is Lords of Magic.
See, and from where I'm sitting, this is all buzzes and pops to me, because basically my existence after Masters of Orion 2... is I would sit there and I'd walk down the aisle of Best Buy browsing, looking at all these various games which had amazing artwork and really enticed me into wanting to play them. And as I looked through, and I kept seeing RTS, 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 real-time strategy, real-time strategy, and boonk, back on the show, boonk, back on the show. And then I would, you know, suddenly find myself in the
Dune
CD.
Dune 2 started it all.
You only had to learn one RTS.
It was a disservice done by Blizzard, I think, was that they just popularized the RTS so much that people forgot about turn-based strategy games, except for the exception of Civilization, which continues to be a wonderful game.
Because it's all turn-based.
Right? You know, they screwed up the multiplayer game in that as well. I want to say it was number 3, where they last I saw, they never patched it such that you could play the multiplayer game just fine until you got bombers, and then you went to bomb an enemy city, and it would crash the game. And it was a known bug, and they never bothered to fix it. Well, at least last I had seen.
Oh, that's not... as bad as anything Bethesda puts out. Oblivion. Oh my god, they release probably their beta, their bugged out beta as their primary release and never support their stuff.
Microsoft.
Oh man. Yeah. It is Oblivion is awful.
It's called player beta testing.
Yeah.
So how do you, let me ask you this, those of you who you guys who actually do get into that, do you find it difficult then at all to make that transition? Because obviously when you get into, when you're doing role-playing...
turn-based to...
Well, when, you know, when you're doing, for example, no, when you're on the tabletop and you're doing role-playing games and you get down into that combat section, that is all turn-based. I mean, see, for me, it's always been a certain mindset. I'm geared towards, you know, ka-chunk, this happens this turn, ka-chunk, this happens this turn, and you go on and so forth. And You can't do that in a role playing game. And all you can't do that free flowing thing when it comes to combat.
Well, I switch between turn based strategy, like old school Age of Wonders and stuff, to modern strategy, although that's not really my bag necessarily. With ease. I mean, it's just a different game. I stop one game, switch gears mentally, load up another game, stop playing, go down to somebody's house, start rolling some dice and playing.
So really, I mean, what you're saying is the problem is me. I'm just an idiot.
Yeah, well, no, it's not that you're an idiot. It's when you play an RTS, you have to have a ready, fire, aim mentality.
Yeah, it's you twitch.
You have to make moves. Don't think about your moves. You will get more benefit out of making a move that you don't think about than you do by pausing the 30 seconds and thinking.
RTS is less about strength.
Like that is hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
RTS is more about twitch than it is about strategy. Strategy's involved. Don't get me wrong, but that's more at the beginning and stuff, depending on the game. It's all different. But yeah, I think RTSs are more about Twitch. It's about setup and then Twitch. Twitch gaming is like the jumping quick button
mashing.
Yeah.
Rogues.
I find I'm increased. You know, I find actually as I get older, and this may be a result of video games or I don't know, maybe just personality shift, that I get increasingly impatient during role playing games, like tabletop role playing games.
Yeah, I know.
I want them to move faster than they do.
In what way, though? What do you mean?
Combat?
Are you talking specifically combat, or do you want
the plot
to move forward?
All of it in general. And this is not the kind of thing where it's like, I think this is right. I would almost recognize this as a fault in myself. And that's like, if the description goes too long, I want long, detailed descriptions.
You mean the box text.
But about 10 seconds into it, I tune it out.
No, this is from the Game Master.
Yeah, I'm talking from the Game Master. I'm not talking books.
But the thing is you want that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want that. I think it's great, but it's like I just kind of I zone out. I'm thinking about something else.
He walks through the stables.
I know. Are you zoning out because what you're hearing is boring to you, or are you zoning out because you like, okay, yeah, okay, I've got it. You've told me enough. Now I want my character to go do something.
Yes.
Well, I am GMing. It's possible.
Column B. And it's like in combat, there could be 3 other player characters and 10 NPCs out there, And even if I'm the last one to go, I already know what my action is and I want to do it. I'm ready to do it. And I just kind of sit there and I don't know. I just get really impatient. I don't consider this good. I consider this bad, but it's just how I'm becoming. And I don't know if that's, you know, RTSs and real-time gaming is ruining me on this, or if it's just more other stresses and anxiety in life is making it hard for me to focus on things.
You need to calm it the f*** down. F-bomb.
Chad.
You have to edit this one, don't worry about it.
10 minutes and 20 some odd seconds.
But you know what, though? Chad's right, though. I think that you do need just to kind of calm down. You see, and as someone who prefers to DM or GM, hearing you say that concerns and disturbs me, just because the fact that it does, because as a GM, you put a lot of this effort into A, descriptions, B, setting a tone and a feel,
right,
and laying some groundwork, and to have impatient players,
impatient players are a good thing. In some of the later games I've story told or DM'd or whatever euphemism you want to use, the players find it hard to decide on a course of action. They get plenty of detail, they get plenty of plot hooks, and they just want to discuss it endlessly for 2 hours at the table before they make a move. And it just
I've had that too.
And that is true, because they get into they either over planning and then they end up just bum rushing whatever it is that's there, or they sit there, and because their personalities are also strong at the table, they end up arguing with each other over what course of action to take.
And I'm guilty of that as well.
But for me, though, that's, again, from a GM's perspective, that's a good thing, I think, because A, it ends up, depending on what you're playing, but it ends up being a reward system, because you're seeing, as a GM, you're witnessing character development happening, which is good, and that's what you want. And also, too, just provides more amusement and creates a better, it's just a better social experience with the game.
Yeah. I mean, look at how we have a thread in our hidden forums for the host about
this double secret forums
about Adam's games. And each time he runs one, we get another thread going, and you initiate this, Adam, and you're like, tell me what I'm doing. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. Tell me what I'm doing right. Give me advice. Lay it on the line. You can't insult me.
That's late a good thing.
And then I take those, and when we get all the responses in, I put them out on the normal forums, because people say they want to hear about more about our games. So
he
I
does do. The same thing with the email arguments between himself and his wife.
Indeed, you just haven't gotten to them yet; they're buried. But anyway, the thing we keep on telling Adam, and you are improving it over the last game. You did improve, is more detail, more description. More. And Dan, you said this yourself. So,
and back to Dan's problem. Is your issue that are you not feeling in character enough, that life is intruding on the game? And
I think that's completely it. I think stresses from outside the game, just my mind is too hyped up to begin with when I come into the game, that I can't slow it down enough to really immerse myself. I'm just like, because I'm already in that mode, you go to work and it's just like do and deadlines and get this done. And then you come home, it's like, man, I got 4 hours before I got to go to bed and I got to finish this and do this and take care of this. So when I sit down to a game, my mind is already in such an overdrive that even though I want the description, I want the depth, I want the in-characterness, I want the role-playing, that all I can think is what I'm going to do next. It's like the kind of person where when they listen to someone else talk, they're not listening to you. They're thinking of a response. Mm-hmm. And then,
I find the same thing true with myself, but different, so to speak.
So you don't find the same
thing. So you don't find it true with yourself.
So I have all the same stresses of, life and work and this and that and everything else, all going on in my life. And gaming day, all that stuff's going on at work. And then I come home and I'm thinking to myself, man, I don't want a game. I had a hard day at work. Oh, my God, I can't believe I can do this. And then I go over to Adam's and we sit down and it starts. And I just find that I am able to put all of that stuff, all that stress on hold. And it stops and I get into my character and I get into Adam's story and I enjoy it. And all that stuff that you're having is still going on for you, for some reason you have trouble putting it on hold.
Right.
I think a lot of what you described there, Chad, is very true. It's, and that shows, you know, really a good example of the strength that a really good either, you know, campaign or game session can really bring to someone, because it is indeed, it ends up being that tremendous escape. But it makes me think of something that you had talked about before, Dan, and not necessarily related to this, but that having that support network, you know, if you have people, you have to have those who are around you and those who are personally connected to you buy into what you do and accept it is what you're doing. Because, you know, you can leave that work stress and all that stuff behind, but if you don't have either the family support or those who are very close to you, that kind of support there, that ends up becoming too much of a distraction. And it works its way into your game and you end up just not, you know, ruining the session.
Mm-hmm. So thanks, Dan, for ruining our session.
You're welcome.
Actually, you know, I did.
Actually, I believe I called last week's game because I wanted to bowl.
Yep.
I did have a question. I do have a question, another question for Dan, just to kind of follow up on your confessional about your problem. Tell us about your mother.
We're going to hug afterwards. We're all holding hands right now.
Was it your
mother
or your father, Dan?
And none of us are wearing pants.
Dan, I know your mother. Don't actually tell us about your mother.
We're wearing each other's pants.
Speaking of being confessional.
On each other's heads.
So, while we're at dinner this very night.
Oh, jeez, what I say now?
It hurts.
It hurts.
While Adam was standing up rubbing his belly.
Freaking me the hell out.
Chris asks us being, in this case, me and Carla, my wife. So when did you tell her that you play role-playing games? And my response was, well, actually pretty quickly, because on our very first date, Carla used the word wormhole in a sentence.
And Dan was like, oh, I gotta go take care of something.
And we were not talking
something
about...
I need to get a, I have to get
so
a towel.
Then,
be back in 35 seconds.
So then, Chris.
Yes.
This man that I had known from the author line on several Facet books, having written role-playing games, indeed one could say have made some portion of his living doing it, comes to tell us...
I got paid like actual real money.
I know.
It was wonderful.
I got paid some money for the M&A stuff, but I'm sure it wasn't the same kind of money.
I'm sure it wasn't the $25 you made.
No, yeah. It was, you know, actually, and not to sit here and say, wow, look at me, I made money. But, you know, for the age I was at the time I did that, which was about 13 years ago, I think for Chaos March.
You were 42 13 years ago?
No, it was a sprightly 42 at that. No, it was...
Is that why you're fingering the Care Bear?
This thing is so distracting, this damn Care Bear. I keep putting them in sitting positions, and it's Rainbow Bear, and I hate
you should
the
put
care
them down.
Bears.
It helps.
Be careful how you position them. Do you see the little baby bear here?
I do.
That's not a coincidence.
I know how that happens when two bears really love each other.
They hug each other in a special way.
That's right. And your rainbow hooks up with your sun cloud, your little rain cloud. Anyway,
right. And you get this little bastard... Oh, two hearts. Look at that. Man, he's got some kind of like freakish Indonesian deformity.
And they're blue and pink.
Why does it have to be Indonesian?
Nice. Every time.
There go your Indonesian listeners.
You hop on the news, there's someone with a freak deformity. They're always from Southeast Asia.
What?
Now.
I hate to agree
what?
With you.
What? It's true. Yeah. It is completely true. It is completely true.
Everyone but Chad at feartheboot.com.
I love it. It's completely true.
It's like saying that great white basketball player. Yeah, that guy. Oh, wait, no, not that guy, because he doesn't exist.
Wow. All right.
Nothing but net.
Now,
what was your question?
So here's the question to all this. Mm-hmm. You then go on to tell me that you did not tell your wife that you gamed until 6 months into your relationship.
Absolutely. It was at least 6 months in the relationship.
And this was because of what? Gamer shame?
Gamer shame is... honestly, you know, actually, I wrote a... I used to write a column in Shadus Magazine. Those people who remember Shadus Magazine.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, for an independent gaming magazine, it was probably one of the best ones out there at the time. However, that aside, yeah, absolutely. Gamer shame. You didn't... You know, I'm 16 years old. This is you know, my first serious girlfriend, and by serious, I mean one that I can go and drive a car and go pick up and take out and try to impress and all that.
Okay.
And, you know, and hopefully try and score with.
And nice.
There you go. Well, that's serious.
Yeah, you lost me until there.
Well,
now I'm right
honestly,
there with you.
Yeah, let's just go on a date so I can spend money on you and show you a good time and then go
and
home.
Show you
my nothing, you know? Yeah, anybody who thinks anything else is fooling themselves. However,
here's my bedroom. You want to see my role-playing collection?
So
I got some great figs.
But the last thing, because now you got to remember, this is the mid to late 80s, and you know, gaming is not necessarily in this way is not necessarily that, you know, it was still bad to be geekish back then. It was not highly looked upon.
Yeah.
So the last thing you want to do is sit there and say, yeah, you should have seen the session we had last weekend. My fighter, he friggin' rocked. You know, we were going up against this Drider.
Staff.
We were fighting this Drider, and I totally scored this awesome hit on him and chopped his arm off, did 20 points of damage. It was great.
Oh my god, critical hit!
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know,
you criticaled your way into my heart.
And of course,
heart.
The next thing you know, her head's in my lap. And, you know,
wow! That just,
no, so, but the
thing doesn't work like that. I've tried.
No, it don't work that way. So you don't want to say that because, oh my gosh, you play Dungeons and Dragons? What the hell's wrong with you? I got to go home now. So take me home now. So no, you don't say that. And so until...
Chris, I met my wife in a comic book shop.
See, but you guys are all different.
She threw dice at me.
Dan met Carla online. Geek. You met your wife in a comic shop. Geek. You know, and then you too. I mean, didn't
met
you?
Met her in a salad bar.
Well, see, okay, but that's... Yeah, but see, that's
baby, I crit on 17.
That's just because
have some salad.
That's just because you took. Right. That's just because you took improved critical and you have keen and you're
right. So right. Because right. So,
but there's another side to that. Can I just? I want to go to the other side.
All right.
The other side of that is, of course, and
Dan's
and
you, not talking as much as he usually.
I know. I'm sorry. And I'll shut up after this and let Dan take over. But the other side of that is, though, is the group that I played with. Suddenly, and we gamed in my parents' basement around my parents' pool table.
Okay, big shock.
What did you say?
I know. Please continue.
Oh, and so then suddenly I'm gone because I have a girlfriend and now I'm going to go on a date. And so of course you get the other end of that where they're essentially angry at you for stepping
she
out on them.
Girl,
you know your gaming mistresses essentially are upset.
Hey
you
man, bros before hoes.
yeah. Let's keep that word bro away from me, shall we?
Can we go play GameCube?
But go ahead, dude.
Bro. So, all right. So you didn't do that for 6 months. How did this finally come up?
You know, I think what actually happened is I just said that I just told her. I said,
I got a problem. I put it. That's not my fault. I drove. Maybe I got to go see my other woman.
I drove.
D20.
We drove to a remote location. I locked the doors. I said, "There's something I have to tell you."
Sam Lewis is pregnant. Rolling up in a carpet in my trunk. Mustache and all.
A separate carpet.
No, I told her, yeah, I play role playing games, specifically Dungeons and Dragons. Although I think we were just getting into BattleTech at that time, and and she was actually very cool with it. So
no, she's not. She's like, you know what? I lied. That's not 12 inches.
But then I took out my ruler and I said, no, really, this is a 1 here and there's a 12 here. But no, I told her, and
that's centimeters, idiot.
She was
1 and 2 next to each other doesn't mean 12.
And she was cool with it, and at least that was the impression I got out of it. And after, yeah, and then I brought her home, and then about 4 weeks later, she actually started to return my calls. No, so
it was BattleTech.
And 4 kids later, you're happy.
That's right.
You're like, I played D&D. She was done. And they're like, and we're getting into BattleTech. Then she was like, all right.
Oh, all right.
Well, that's okay then.
Suddenly you're cool.
Well, maybe I'll let you into my group, Chris.
Whoa. You know, I have all the unseen mechs. Baby, you're speaking my language.
But you know what, though? But in all honesty, the gamer shame stuff extended beyond just those personal things. It extended into, your work life. You didn't necessarily early in your work career. You don't want to admit those kinds of things. You only find out by accident.
Hey, Chris, I remember a story you told on the forums where at work, in a work situation, you overcame your gamer shame.
I did.
You swallowed it and just kind of went forward.
Yep, eventually I did overcome it. And actually, not only did I overcome it,
you swallowed it. You took that challenge.
You
swallowed it down like a real man. I'm sleeping here tonight.
And of course, then after I swallowed, I stuck my tongue out with that look of approval.
Rating. All right, so gamer shame at work.
Yes, but so eventually, you know, and this happened. I am not unique in this sense, but I did overcome that gamer shame, and I would go and I would to the point where I would list it as other interests on job applications. Even during an interview, I had an interview for a writer position with an aircraft company. And I had listed my writing experience because this was obviously critical to the job. And I brought in samples of my work, which were, of course, all these BattleTech books or Shatterin books. And, you know, the guy who I was interviewing with, he looked at them to see that they were there. He didn't, like, thumb through them, but I did leave them there.
Lucky. Oh, and, leaving them there, bad move.
But I mean, I got it back.
And you don't have this job, right?
I did not get the job. Well, but okay. Although that was not the reason why. But so now you know it's not that big of a deal. I mean, you know, but of course I'm older and much more confident in my my gamingness, I guess you could say.
You're already married and you score. So
exactly.
It's like you're not trying to impress anybody.
Yeah, good place in your career.
Yeah.
I got nothing to prove.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's a generational thing because I think that's different now. I think that honestly, people who are role playing gamers now don't have to worry about that. I think because of the acceptance that computer games and video games have, and so taking that extra step, that extension to role playing games, it just
John was prom king.
See,
yeah, right there, slammed.
See that? I guarantee you would never have happened in my high school.
John was prom king of an all boys school.
Let's not go there.
Wow. I
bet you look great in his outfit.
He looks cute in a tux.
Does that answer your question?
No, you got nothing.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Welcome to Chris Hussey's Fear the Boot.
Apparently so.
Gamer shame in the workplace. Show.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say that there's certainly better acceptance of RPGs today. It is still far from good.
I put this podcast on my resume.
Now, what about in social circles?
Well, you know, but see, the thing about the podcast
helped you get your job, didn't it?
Well, see, but the podcast is a little different because if you talk about gaming, I mean, you get all the stereotypes of, oh, you're one of those crazy nerds that kills people in sewers and worships the devil.
I don't think it's like that anymore.
More or less true. There are a lot of people out there that still believe
it's,
that.
It's
I agree with
especially
that.
Especially in mid-America where we're at.
It's getting better, but it ain't there. But when you talk about podcasts, what people instantly see, at least within what we do, which Adam and I do, is programming.
Celebrities with press passes.
Well, that's what we see.
That's right.
But what, you know, you go for a programming job, what they see is you're involved with internet radio. The topic suddenly becomes inconsequential. I mean, it doesn't matter. It could be at role-playing games, religion, pets, doesn't matter. You are involved with some kind of an internet technology, media sort of thing, and that's all they see. I don't think they even notice the topic. Except maybe subconsciously. With the gamer shame thing, I kind of cut the difference because, with Carla, I told her, I mean, it came up pretty early on, but of course, while she's not into role playing games, she is into some pretty dorky, geeky things. So it wasn't real hard to hit into that topic.
But I couldn't hide it from my wife because she was part of my gaming group.
Well, right. But I got to say, though, like at work and stuff, I don't bring this stuff up. The couple of people I've told at work that I do play role-playing games are either people that I know real well and I'm comfortable with, or they're people where it's kind of like one subject at a time we work our way there. Like when we were talking about holiday parties a couple episodes ago, that guy where I kind of worked one step at a time. Oh, you play World of Warcraft. You play other video games.
That thumping was a cat, by the way.
You play other video games. You play Dawn of War. Have you ever played Tabletop 40K? Yeah. Oh, you do. Have you ever played a role-playing game? And now suddenly we can get to D&D.
Adam, I think, were you telling me this story? You were at a party or something, and somebody was thinking of drinking games. And somebody was like, okay, I got this game we can play. It's a drinking game, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to roll D6s. And you were like, you game. He's like, yeah, how do you know? It's like, because nobody but a gamer will call six-sided dice D6s.
Yeah. Well, if you talk about a non-gamer, there's only one kind of die in the entire world, which is six-sided dice. And you just say, let's roll dice.
Yeah.
When you identify the kind of die, you're a gamer.
As a, you know, speaking of that, and just as a side note, our local, at the TV station I worked at up in Duluth, the meteorologist there, he was part of our gaming group that we had in our later years, and he was very, very avid gamer. He'd gamed all his life and all that, so he was very much into it. On his
last couple days on the job before he left and went off to a different job, he, during his weather forecast, threw in D&D terminology. And specifically one time he said, he was talking about this approaching storm front.
Oh, this storm front's going to be a challenge rating 8 to those of you in trailers.
Well, actually what he said was, he said, the storm front's coming in. He says, it's not going to be bad. It's not like it's going to take a level of barbarian and rage on us. You know, which went over the head of about 97% of the audience. But all of us, you know, of course, in his group and any other gamer out there, you know, we all knew what he was saying, so we laughed. But I'm sure there were, just like with the D6 thing, I'm sure there were a bunch of people out there who had no idea he was a gamer. All of a sudden went, hey, you know, where did that come from?
Awesome.
Scott, though, you were bringing up a point about in other social circles.
Well, in my experience, the gaming, the nerd thing, the geek thing, in social circles, it's acceptable to bring up now. It's not an automatic strike against you if you're chatting with friends, if you're at the bar and you meet some people. It's something acceptable to bring up. But in my workplace, it's not, like Dan said, it's something you approach obliquely, or something you just leave in the corners, or it's something you discuss once you're comfortable with the people. And I think there is definitely a difference between how you'd bring that up in different settings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was a church group that I was involved with, and I brought that up one time about the fact that I was a gamer and an avid gamer and did this. And
Simmer!
Well, one of the guys in there looked at me. He was looking at me like he couldn't believe what he was hearing, because he had no idea that I did this. And he just gave me the strangest look. And the other guys, they seemed okay with it. And after everything was over, we're just kind of talking socially afterwards. Of course, they were asking me about it, and I said, you know, hey, I said, you guys should sit in, and I should teach you how to play sometime. You'd have a lot of fun. It's an enjoyable, it's a good escape. It's a fun thing to do. It's a good way to spend an evening. You know, and two of the guys were like, yeah, you know, it sounds kind of fun. I knew some friends who did it. But the one guy who was looking at me funny, he would like nod his head like, okay, fine, but don't ever really ask me to do this, because there'd be no way I'd want to do this.
I gotta say, even as someone who is active within a church, that is a very hard place to bring this up, because, you know, people sometimes ask, they know that I'm into podcasts, internet radio kind of stuff. They say, what's your show on? And typically the only response I can really give is, well, it's about tabletop games, which of course these people could probably interpret to mean Monopoly.
Scrabble.
I freely admit
this is about Scrabble.
I freely admit at work that I play role-playing
games.
Okay,
but it's a different kind of job. I mean, you're in a geeky job.
Geeky job. Well, we're both in IT. We're just in two separate
sides.
But you're
bringing
it
up in church.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about.
Let me lay this out on the table. You don't want this brought up in every single social circle that you hang out with, though. I can tell you an example right off the bat where you don't want this talked about.
Who?
With your mother.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it with my mom.
Well.
And there's a reason for that. My mom knows I play role-playing games. She doesn't know I do a podcast. And Dawn even tried to tell her, oh, Chad does a podcast. He's really proud of it and stuff. And I told her, no, don't tell her about it. Because my mom views playing role-playing games, watching anime, doing a podcast like this, anything like that, is childish. It's perfectly acceptable. Playing D&D is acceptable for a 10-year-old or for a 13-year-old. But when you grow up and such, you grow out of it, and you grow away from it, and you don't do things anymore.
I think
I don't even bring it up. Yeah, I don't even bring it up with her because I don't want to argue about it. I'm not going to give it up. She's not going to change her opinion, and it doesn't matter in our relationship. Right. Well, you're right in that point.
I think there's another important point in there, which is that when you talk about kind of the stigmatizing of role players, the obvious example everyone runs to is the, oh, it's demonic or drives you insane or makes you kill people in the sewers. But I think there are many different stigmas that are associated with role-playing, and that's one of them as well, is that people say, well, you basically sit around a table just playing a little make-believe game with a bunch of other grown men. Isn't that kind of pathetic? And
you know, people used to sit around campfires and tell each other stories. All we're doing is sitting around a kitchen table and telling us each other stories.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Well, right. In fact,
and we put structure and rules on it that a 9-year-old couldn't necessarily understand.
Right, and there are other podcasts, Harping Mix, various podcasts have gone in great depth into this, talking about how really the role-playing game is almost like a continuation of the tribal shamanic tradition, you know, or the oral history and storytelling and mythology and all that kind of stuff. But the problem is that people today, they don't have those kinds of perspectives. They don't come to this with an open mind or really even an educated mind on the subject. They come in just with preconceived notions and stereotypes. And when you say, I do this, they just instantly plug you into that.
Mm-hmm. And the media is partially to blame for that, too. They're, you know, I mean, and apart from the news coverage.
And you're part of the media. You're to blame.
Burn the witch.
Commie pig dog.
But, I mean, there is, you know, apart from the negative news coverage, there's the, there was a couple sitcoms. I remember there was the one, the Christina Applegate sitcom from a few years ago on NBC. They did an episode where she finds this guy and she really likes him and he's a good looking guy and he seems to have everything going for him. And over the course of the episode, he says, yeah, I'm going to, you know, let's go out tonight. I want to take you to this really exclusive club. And she's like all excited. So she gets all dressed up and they go and they go to this bookstore and it gets closed down. And then suddenly the dungeon master comes out and all the other guys who are players, they put on these goofy hats and they like start to bow down and they make all this over exaggerated crap that really made the game look bad. And so she had to spend the nights in there, you know, with all these guys around there talking about their characters. And, you know, while the idea is an accurate representation of a bunch of adult men getting together in gaming,
except for the hats,
all the extra stuff, it gives that
they negative, made it look as bad as possible. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's easy to because do. It becomes a stereotype.
It becomes a joke.
Right.
Yet I can't remember who made the quote. I don't have it in front of me, but to paraphrase, there was a man in history who said, give me the bards and I'll control a generation. And it's true that most of the understandings we have of the way the world works does not come from truth. It comes from just popular entertainment. And, you know, we sit down and say, well, why would people be offended by these things? Because it's just a sitcom. It's just entertainment. And you could apply this to any number of issues on the face of the earth, whatever you want to talk about just about. But the fact is, these things do shape people's understandings. That you can sit down and someone and say, look, I play in D&D. And they're like, oh, well, that's that thing where you guys act all weird and light candles. It's like, well, have you ever played?
Wait, you see my robe.
It's like,
have you ever played D&D? And the answer is always no. Well, where did you come up with this idea? And they may not even be able to tell you because where they came up with this is from stuff like that sitcom. They just see these derogatory examples of gamers and run with that.
Popular culture, overheard comments. Gamer stories. Gone bad.
Years and years ago, I was unemployed, and I went to the unemployment office to file for unemployment, and they ask you a whole bunch of questions because they're basically filling out a resume type thing, and they're also trying to get you a job because they want you off of unemployment as quick as possible. And she was like, well, what are your interests and such? Like, oh, well, I'm into this, I'm into video games, and I'm into role-playing games like D&D and such. And she's like, role-playing games? Role-playing games caused my cousin to kill himself.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
and I just look at her, and I'm like
no.
The stare she was giving me, and it was just like, I kind of mumbled out a half-hearted, well, you know, maybe it wasn't the game. Maybe he had some problems coming. And it kind of trailed off an uncomfortable silence, and then it moved on.
When you should have said, well, what was he playing, riffs?
Yeah.
Man, Man, what is with you tonight? 10 minutes and 20 seconds, now 38 minutes.
You're getting belligerent, don't
you? Man, you better write that down.
I am going to write this down.
Related to what you're saying, though, Chad, and Dan, this actually goes to something that you were talking about in episode 35, and we were talking about it earlier this afternoon, is I do have to commend WotC for their attempts that they did when they launched 3.0 to really try and get a bit more mainstream acceptance. You know, like I was saying, I was there when they had the press conference at Gen Con, they had the big launch party, and they really tried to make it like a legitimate affair. Like, this was a big deal. This was a new edition of, you know, the grandfather of all role-playing games, the most recognizable name in role-playing games, and they really tried to make a big splash with this. And then they even went and did some television advertising to try and, you know, legitimatize the game. And then they had, I remember there was, I think it even still exists now, it's like playdnd.com, and they had this flash animation movie type of thing where basically you could go there and it would show you, in a very broad way, how to play Dungeons & Dragons. And it was available to anyone to go look at. And they had tried to advertise that website in some mainstream media.
You know, I do recall that. Now, I'm going to confess that it was several years ago, and I don't recall specific ads. But thinking of the ads that they're using now on various websites and such, it strikes me that while these may be put in places that a broader audience can see, ultimately the message of these ads and the way they're designed, it still really does not hit at the source of these social stigmas. That it still just kind of seems to advertise, hey, this is fun, to people that are already within the demographic that would play these games anyway, typically savvy people that are into video games or into some kind of gaming like this already. It's not really going after the old woman or the middle-aged businessman or whatever, trying to explain, you know what, not everyone that plays these games puts on black robes and lights candles and kills each other in sewers. Or says that, like in the case of Chad with this lady at the unemployment line, that no, this guy had emotional problems. Mm-hmm. Role-playing games didn't do this to him.
Nobody ever says, my football fan brother killed himself because of football.
Right, they'll say he had problems and then he killed himself.
And this guy could have been one of those guys who painted himself blue and had the, just went crazy. You know, the obsessed football player.
But exactly.
You can get obsessed about anything.
He had problems and got obsessed and killed himself. Football didn't do it.
It's acceptable for a role-playing game to have done that, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. What you need to see is you need to have a show like, you need to have characters on a show like Grey's Anatomy or ER or some serious drama and have them actually seriously have a scene where, for some reason, because of the story, the characters in the show are playing the game and it's just treated as just an activity.
Even but not that, playing, but just discussing.
Yeah.
Just having something in it. Even start out small. A positive light, a positive comment, something to break the monotony.
You will never have that because you can have that about gays and blacks and different religions or non-religions or politics because those are all really important things. And there's big organizations that push that, and there's tons of people writing letters about that. Role-playing games are just that. They're games. And they're not important because it's just a hobby. And there's no big organization fighting for gamer rights. You'll never see it.
Not a huge one. But you know what? But the principle is the same thing because, you know, to go back, you said gays. And gays definitely were, there were stereotypes that everybody had about gays. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the gay lifestyle and gay culture was essentially, in some ways, mainstreamed through that media. Mm-hmm. That, you know, Will and Grace is an excellent example of that. Yeah. Where suddenly, oh, you have this character who looks completely normal.
He is completely normal.
Quote, unquote, normal. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, oh, and by the way, he also happens to be gay.
Right.
You know, and that was, and it's going to take something of that type of caliber, I think, before it really gets that level of acceptance.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
Yeah, you're in media. You got all this.
I'll tell you a story after the mics go off.
Well, we have tons of famous people to listen to this show, so we're absolutely.
Patrick Stewart. Come on.
We all know who Michael Eisner really is on the forums, so he's going to go and take care of this for us.
You know what's funny is that, like, you just said Patrick Stewart, we're talking about this, got me thinking. Like in Star Trek, they had the holodecks.
Number one.
Where they would dress up in costumes, and then they would go into the holodecks, and they would role-play out these things.
They would LARP.
And even people who aren't dorks, because Star Trek is very mainstream. I mean, there's the whole dark dork culture that obsesses about it, but then there's also mainstream people who enjoy it and like it, too. And that holodeck thing with where they LARP, perfectly acceptable. Well, it's not looked at as role-playing
for a couple reasons. First of all, unlike role players, all the stereotypes about LARPers are completely true.
I am forced to agree with this point because its logic is flawless.
And we all know if the holodeck really existed, once any normal male would come out.
Here's the point. This is a prejudice that comes purely off of name. Because let's be honest, what is role playing? Okay, you assume a role and take it on. When you go in on a business interview and they say, okay, pretend I'm an angry customer, how would you respond to me? You're role playing.
Right.
When three little girls sit around playing house, they're role playing. I get people saying, oh, well, role playing, you know, if you play a wizard, it's going to drive you into the occult. Well, wait a minute. I remember growing up watching my two little sisters and a best friend coming over.
And if I play the holy paladin, that's going to drive me to church?
Yeah, well, it's and then watching my two little sisters and one of their friends come over. They're playing house, one's the mom, one's the dad, one's the family dog. So what, is this going to drive one of them to be transsexual and the other one to be some kind of transspecial?
I knew the furry porn would come back in here at some point.
The moment you attach that name to it, that this is a role-playing game, or that this is Dungeons and Dragons, that's suddenly where all these things pour. And you see that exactly in Star Trek, because I don't know a single person that has watched Star Trek who has not afterwards said, man, I wish a holodeck existed.
Oh, well, I wish a holodeck existed. Well,
like, what would you do? You would dress up in costume, you'd walk into it, and you'd lock.
No, there would be no clothing involved.
All right, well,
not much role-playing going on.
This is the wrong podcast to discuss this, but I've wondered that too, but this is the wrong podcast to discuss that. But, you know, you walk in there, effectively, you put on costumes, you LARP, the computer is the game master.
Yeah.
But, once again, you just can't call
and
it
the
that
computer is Majel Barrett, so, you know,
right.
It all works out.
Even acting is
a female GM, as if there is such a thing.
Can the computer provide you with more than going to a location, killing things, and looting their stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why nobody recognizes this as a role-playing game.
Yeah, you don't kill stuff
because you don't
take...
Go to Monster B, take Treasure C.
Perhaps they would recognize it better if on some episode of Star Trek, Patrick Stewart had gone to the holodeck and he's in a 10-foot by 10-foot room with an orc and a treasure chest.
Your exits are to the north and west. And the west.
Okay, and the computer goes, Patrick Stewart, it's your turn. Picard says, you're in my way, orc.
And Picard goes, lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt.
He attacks the darkness.
I cast magic missile. Back to something Dan said. Role-playing games versus D&D. I think, in my experience, when I've brought this subject up with people, the difference is immediate. If you say, yeah, I play role-play games. Oh, like what? As long as you don't bring up D&D, the stereotype isn't there at first. But if you say, oh, I play D&D... you automatically have a stereotype that's very associated with D&D specifically.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all, because if you look at, like, all the popular media assaults on the role player have all been really through a fantasy game. You know, you don't have a movie like Monsters and Mazes about people playing a science fiction game. Or people playing a modern game or a historic game.
The sad thing is I kind of enjoyed Monsters.
You know what?
And Mazes.
I did too, but you know another thing that freaked me out about that movie is when they sat around the table and they were playing, they had like the 2-inch size loose leaf, their 3-ring binders filled with paper. And I thought, oh my gosh, how much character information do you have? Talk about your level of detail. Holy crap.
What was that one movie?
But wait, you know what, though? No, Scott, you're right. It's a double-edged sword because... you can't say, I play role-playing games, you know, like Shadowrun, or, you know, like
What's
GURPS.
That?
Yeah, exactly. But
like D&D. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, see, because it's
you're better off.
Because it's so well-known, you're kind of hamstrung by
it's instantly recognizable, once again, in all of these negative stereotypes. I'll bet you even in that sitcom you're talking about, Christina Applegate, it was a fantasy game they were playing, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, actually, I think it was D&D.
Yeah, and you say... you walk up to someone on the street and say, name a fantasy role-playing game, everyone's going to name D&D. And if they're not an avid role player, they probably couldn't even name another fantasy RPG outside of D&D. They may not even be able to name another RPG at all outside of D&D. But that's where all the negative stereotypes are. I mean, even me sitting here making fun of the lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt. What is that? It's fantasy LARP. You don't see... I guess really
hilarious fantasy LARP.
I mean, even like some of the smack talk we give about like the World of Darkness LARPers, that's not the kind of thing that's real well known outside of the gaming community. You know, sure, people might know about, oh, well, here's the goths or the emos or whatever, but to really identify this as people that are into some kind of a vampire LARP or whatever.
Oh, there's a LARPer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a totally different thing, and those people should feel shame.
Someday we're going to have to do a cross podcast episode with a LARPing podcast.
Please let me go over there.
I don't even know what we talk about. We have nothing in common with those people.
What are you homos doing?
Don't hit you with my sword, but I can't touch you.
And they're going to be like, fear the boot, don't hate us for being creative.
I don't hate you because you're creative. Hate you because you're LARPing.
It was always fun to be at Gen Con in the days when White Wolf was still very big, especially when the Masquerade, the whole LARP thing came out, and you'd walk through the halls at the convention halls at nighttime, and you could just see these clusters of people, and they would either have the long brown trench coats, or they would have the white makeup on and the stockings, you know, and all that. And you'd walk by and be just like, it's like, man, if I only had a PPC, I could just take care of the whole group right now.
All right, let me go ahead and throw out a point
PPCs
here.
PPCs weren't good against infantry, by the way.
That's true. Just, I'm going to play machine gunner or flamer.
There's something I see. I'm going to get this message from at least one person. So I'm going to go ahead.
Why do you hate LARPers?
Well, close. But I'm going to go ahead and head off that one person, whoever you may be. So you right there, feel shame. They're going to say something to the effect of, well, wait a minute, you guys are sitting here talking about all the negative stereotypes about role players and how unfair they are and blah, blah, blah. Yet here you guys are riding off on the negative stereotypes of LARPers, doing the exact same thing to them. That
I'm not.
I am.
Adam is.
I'm being facetious. Some people can't distinguish that, but I am being facetious.
I don't even know what that means.
But, Adam, you say you're not, so fire.
I take it to the extremist level.
Just like the fanatic, the burning fanatic that just have no reason. You're just like, brah.
Do I need a reason?
No, I mean, not for me. I mean,
I don't like it.
Put the gun down, dude.
I don't like it. They need to go find a closed room somewhere.
Not Denny's?
No, I eat at Denny's.
Thus the fat bastard.
We've discussed this before. I don't feel the need to rehash.
I love LARPing. Actually, even sitting here behind the mics, I'm mysterious and strangely sexual all at once.
You're so emo.
Yeah. As the cat licks itself in your
mouth. Through the mouth.
That's the sexual part.
You and your painted fingernails. And angst.
And my fishnet gloves.
Beady eyes.
That is a good point, though. The stereotypes that we're poking fun at for LARPing are in fun.
Yeah.
There's no... Well, Sorry.
Stereotypes aren't based on nothing.
No, they're not. Exist. But these are fun stereotypes. These are not the kind of stereotypes where...
You know what? If you
talk... You're going to commit suicide if you play a LARP.
Here's the difference. Yeah. If someone walks up to me and says, I'm a big-time LARPer... I might be like, wow, that's not my thing, but I would not think any less of the person for it. That I guess that's the big difference.
Yes.
If they came up to you and said, I'm a big time LARPer, and they have their Harry Potter costume on, but you're not at a con, you're at White Castle.
I am Dragon Wolf.
And they're like, we need you for 5 minutes to stand over here and just kind of be amazed and go, wow, Harry.
Yeah.
I think there's a subtle difference. If somebody comes up to me and says, I'm a big time LARPer, I don't have a problem with it.
You're talking about rock, paper, scissors. And punch him in the face.
Yeah. No, it's when him and six of his buddies are LARPing and come up and approach me and try and engage me.
How often has that happened outside of a convention?
Well, Never, but you know what? That's a good thing.
Chad, I think the distinction here is there's a line between LARPing and the commission of a crime. And what you described is either over that line or dangerously close to that line. But no, I mean, if assuming we are in a relevant situation, like sitting around at work talking about our interests and like, oh, I love football. I like this. Speaking of commission of a crime.
I'm assuming it's a midget. Oh, God.
No, that's the baby.
No, if it was a baby, that wouldn't do.
That's a crime.
The baby can watch. It can't take part.
When you have mommy, daddy, and the baby involved in a threesome, that's a crime.
And that's getting cut.
See, now, like I said, this was a midget.
Anyway.
Oh, midget bear.
See, there you go. To those who wonder what the heck we're talking about, we have...
Don't ask. We'll move on.
That's why the bear's got two hearts.
He's got two hearts on.
How much longer are we going to drive this out?
But anyway, if we were sitting around at work talking about
these
this,
puns.
They're pretty grisly. Well, yeah,
that one's for you, Chaos.
That's all right, though. We'll claw our way through. Man, we just walked into a den of problems.
I feel all black and brown.
But the difference is if we were sitting around at work, and
quit pandering to me.
I'm the total polar opposite of you.
Okay.
Where is this episode going to end?
Let's go play a game of Yo-Gi-Oh. Would that give you a boo-boo? All right, go ahead.
If we're sitting around, we're talking about interests, and someone says, hey, I'm into football, and the next guy down says, I'm into LARPing. Like,
somebody's not walking out of that bar.
I walk to the other side of the room and I just wait and watch and get out my camera phone.
But it, you know, it would not. I, like I said, I wouldn't think less of the person for it, even if it's not my thing. That's
football's acceptable.
No, I'm talking about the LARP or the football guy. That's a different story. I mean,
what is this football?
Quiet down over there.
Oblong pig ball.
It's like Blood Bowl, except they like LARP it on TV.
Oh, okay.
Settle down, old generation. Settle down.
It's like soccer, but it's named correctly.
Oh. There go the European listeners.
Actually, wouldn't that be here? Come the European listeners, because.
Wait, what?
Huh?
Well, he said football is like soccer, except with the correct name. Therefore, this is a compliment to our European listeners.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't mean it that way.
No, the way you said it was an insult.
Okay, so Chris is
moving on.
I just basically put an entire section of the world against us.
Yeah.
You mean the entire world except America?
Except for America.
And role players.
And role players.
When is this episode going to end?
Never.
Sure. Never. Yeah.
It should end quickly.
Just bear with us, Adam. We'll get through it.
Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop are going to come out here pretty soon and start singing.
That would be unbearable.
She dead?
Actually, she is dead. Although I don't think Lamb Chop's dead. I think Lamb Chop's dead? Just going to land around somewhere.
Lamb Chop no. and zombie Sherry
Lamb
Lewis.
Lamb Chop.
zombie Sherry Lewis.
The creepy thing is that Lamb Chop talks like Lamb Chop always talks. But Sherry Lewis is like, Lamb Chop.
The creepy thing is that she Lamb starts Chop gnawing on it.
But then, Sherry Lewis, she used to have some more racy of her little sock puppets, though, didn't she? Like when she was on some of the 70s eras talent variety shows, she had some.
I was only born late 70s.
Yeah, no, but
83, babe. That's mid 80s for those who are counting.
Yuck. You know, 3 years after you were born, I got my first CD player.
So what, she had more racy puppets? Like, what did she have?
No, I mean,
Lamb Chop and Slut Horse or what?
Interspecies.
The Slut Horse, I think, was Edgar Bergen's. But seriously, no, I think Sherry Lewis had. She had Lamb Chop, which was her mainstream white bread, you know, safe for kids kind of thing. But then, I think she had some more. I think actually she had a black sock puppet who was actually a bit more racy.
Oh, so by racy,
racial?
You mean racist?
I'm not talking skin color. I'm talking
like
I'm,
she had Stepan or something.
I don't know. It's like, you know, I think, I don't know, the sock puppet smoked or something or said, I don't know.
Everybody smoked in the 70s. Yeah.
Smoked ganja and didn't work? I mean, is that what?
Anyway,
it's total tangent. Yep. Sorry about that.
Yeah, welcome to the show. isn't it time to end this episode?
Adam, how badly do you want this episode to end? What's it worth to you?
What?
So I'm
not going to deal to save listeners.
That brings to an end our discussion on turn-based computer games, apparently. So,
yeah. Yes, it does. Thank you for tuning in to this great bonus episode on video games. And we will catch you guys next time for a regular episode.
See ya.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Oh, damn it!
No, go again.
What?
See ya.